that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Well, we've got another climactic piece of commentary to add to our list now, haven't we? Listen to this.
Two needed here for England. Flick down the left side! Flick down the left side! He's got him! Can you believe it? Wagner! Wagner has done it! New Zealand win by one run! What a stunning test match! Unbelievable! Anderson can't believe it! The egg to save for New Zealand. The disappointment for England. It's Wagner. He's done it. What a remarkable game of test match cricket.
Is this the moment to bring back the line by the barest of margins? It does not get any closer than that.
And of course, David Gow is quite right to revisit the barest of margins because actually, you couldn't get it any closer, could you? So, Simon, look, lighten up. I know you said England shouldn't enforce the follow-on and it was a horrible mistake. I encouraged them to do it. It's backfired on them. But cricket was the winner.
Oh, cricket's always the winner, Yoz. Yeah, cricket's the winner. Depends if you want it. When you play a test match, you want to win or not. Ben Stokes afterwards said, listen, yeah, we were involved in a great game of cricket. Of course we want to win. You know, we're disappointed to lose, but we can see the bigger picture. And I'm sure lots of people listening to this and lots of people watching, listening, following all around the world would have been absolutely enthralled with what happened. And if it was happening in the middle of the night for everybody, well, they'll catch up with it and be enthralled with what unfolded. One thing I would say, bottom line is, England should never have been in a position to lose that test match. But, you know, if you want to play that way, fine. That's, you know, on you go. But if you want to win, then you need to take smarter decisions.
Yeah, I think that, I suppose, and listening to Stokes and McCullum talking afterwards, of course they're disappointed. But, you know, it was quite revealing, wasn't it, to see both guys' expressions, they were beaming at the end of that game. Because I think, you know, obviously their mission is to promote test cricket and transmit to the world that it's the greatest form of sport or the greatest form of cricket or whatever. And in a way, are they on this sort of exploration to see how far they can push England, how much they can stretch people's imagination and players' abilities to take these, you know, events to their ultimate conclusion, to really challenge players? It's a bit like there's a, okay, so you've conquered K2 or you've conquered Everest, but now you want to do K2 or Nanga Parbat or something. And it's the same as what Owen Morgan said, isn't it? When he took over as the England one day captain, you know, he talked about seeing how far this team could go. And okay, so there are going to be times when they fall down because they've pushed it too far, they've stretched the limits beyond. But isn't that something to applaud in a way? And you know, if it produces that kind of excitement, that kind of tension, I mean, I'm exhausted watching that. And of course, partly it's because it's up in the middle of the night. But I think you'd be exhausted whatever time of day you were watching that, because that tension is just it totally consumes you, doesn't it?
Oh, fantastic finish! Incredible finish. I mean, you know, one of the narrowest margins in Test history. I think there's only been one other Test match that was finished with a one run winning margin. Listen, when England set out, when England enforced the follow on, they did not have their in mind to be chasing 258 to win that game and to set up one of the most exciting finishes in Test match cricket. Of course they didn't. In their mind was to wipe New Zealand off the board inside 3 days. So don't give me this guff about England, you know, stretching the limits and trying to, you know, make the game exciting deliberately. That's not how it works out. And when England set off this morning in pursuit of 258, their intention was not to make the game exciting. Their intention was to win the game, okay, by playing positively. They got themselves into a hole in this Test match because they made a fundamental mistake, which was to enforce the follow-on when cricketing logic says don't enforce the follow-on. They score 500, they have got and then set New Zealand 500 to win in 2 days. And if you get 500 in 2 days, absolutely fine, because then that's the world record with knobs on by, you know, plus 80 runs. And that's fantastic, unbelievable batting. You're stretching the opposition in that scenario. That's what you're doing. But not in this scenario. They've got an ageing bowling attack. They've got a 40-year-old bowler. They've got a 36-year-old bowler. They've got one bowler that can't bowl because he's got a dodgy knee. And then, you know, they've got Ollie Robinson, who's a very good bowler, and they've got Jack Leach, who's a steady left-arm spinner. So they ended up being in the field for 216 overs. 216 overs. All cricketing common sense...
You mean in both innings?
Yeah, over the course of both innings. Yeah, first innings and second innings. So they were in the field for 216 overs with two ageing bowlers and a guy who can barely... Well, he's struggling with his left knee, can only bowl two overs. So I just don't understand the decision to enforce the follow-on. I just don't get it, and it's cost England the game. And it's not hindsight. I can show you a WhatsApp message when England enforced the follow-on, which I sent to a friend of mine, which said, "Don't, you know, if you enforce the follow-on, that's the way
you.
To lose."
Look, okay? We believe you.
So this
we
is not hindsight. It's not hindsight. No, it's just not.
We know.
So you know. What do you want me to say? It was an incredible game of cricket. Okay, and does that make cricket the winner? I don't know. I don't know what it makes. It just means that every now and again you get a really exciting game of cricket. And we all know that cricket can be fantastically exciting. It's wonderful drama. People are talking about it. Great. But it's not England. It wasn't England's intention to make it to make the game exciting. They wanted to win, and they messed up.
Well, no, it wasn't not in that way. No, I agree. Look, I agree. I don't think it's guff to say that it wasn't Stokes' objective, or it was Stokes' objective to make it exciting. Of course, you're right. He wanted to win. They wanted to win the game, and if they could win the game quickly, using Anderson and Broad to get early wickets, as they had done in the previous three New Zealand innings, then it would have worked. But it didn't work. And I think the sort of counter to that, or the alternative scenario, was, OK, if it doesn't work, it's going to be an interesting challenge for our team to chase 250 on a fifth day pitch, which will set us up well for, you know, it might be an exciting game, and it'll set us up well for the future challenges such as the Ashes in 3 months' time. And it will put those players under pressure. And, you know, in a way... Go back to the IPL. Why is the IPL successful? Because you have so many exciting finishes. And also, not just that, but also you're putting players under extreme pressure with the number of quality players around and the potential riches, you know, the things that are at stake all the time. That's where players learn about themselves, dealing with that pressure. And again, players will have learned about themselves today dealing with that pressure. And it's a kind of cumulative process to be able to absorb how to deal with those situations and then, you know, factor those in, those learnings in to your future performances. So it's a sort of investment in the future of the team and the players in a way. I take your point that perhaps logically it wasn't the right thing to do, but Stokes isn't necessarily a man who applies logic to things. He's someone who actually also likes, you know, he likes the romanticism sometimes of, you know, a challenge of some kind and making it harder. Almost, you know, maybe he's a bit of a masochist. He likes to make things tough for himself. I mean, batting and bowling with the state of his knee at the moment, you know, he really is biting on the bullet. And, well, it's one of the big talking points, isn't it, probably, that we'll come on to, is how can he deal with it? Because he's vital to England's future success, the way he's captained the team. That's 10 wins out of 12 now. Obviously, could have been 11. But it has been a fantastic ride, and it was always going to come down at some point. I know you're saying that they could have avoided this situation, but in a way, I'm glad they did it, actually.
Well, fine. If you want to lose, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. If you want to... my point is that England did not set out to stretch themselves. They did not set out to make the game exciting. They did not set out to challenge themselves. They forced the follow-on to win. I think it was a fundamentally flawed decision, as the result of the game has shown. And... okay, it was. It's unusual for the game to end like this. You know, you still felt England should have won the game. Either way, you enforce, you bat again. If you bat again, there's so much time left in the game. The weather forecast was good. To me, it's just cricketing logic. But you know, it sounds incredibly churlish. I'm just saying that. To say that the decision, you know, it's in hindsight, people saying criticizing hindsight is wrong. No, it's not. And to say it's not, it wasn't the wrong decision, I think is wrong as well. But that, you know, it did give us an incredible game of cricket, an unbelievable game of cricket. And that is to be, of course, it's to be celebrated. But I don't accept the point that England sort of set out to challenge themselves. No, they set out because they wanted to win the game. They thought that, yeah, they could knock them off in 3 days, and they've got, you know, they had the bowling attack to knock them off in 3 days. But I think cricketing logic says sometimes you've just got to be a bit smarter. And I don't think England played it that smart with that decision. I'd also take you back to another decision as well that England made in this game. And, you know, it's easy. I get this is a bit easy with hindsight, but actually I also said it at the time, and I got a WhatsApp message to prove this as well. Why declare 8 down when you've got a bloke 153 not out? And you know, England lost 18 wickets in this test match and lost the game. New Zealand lost 20 wickets and won the game. You know, they say it's all about taking 20 wickets. New Zealand didn't even have to take 20 wickets. England pulled out. I know why they pulled out. They pulled out so they could bowl half an hour before lunch, but they could have bowled half an hour after lunch as well. You are allowed to bowl after lunch with a new ball. 430 odd in the first inning. It wasn't as if they had tail enders batting. They had Joe Root there. He was 153 not out. You could have given him another... You know, you could have given him another 10 minutes, 20, 15 minutes. The way he was playing, he could have whacked another 30 runs. And, you know, if he got out, then declare, fine, 9 down, that's fine. I can understand the logic of that. But you've got a bloke who's in. Anyway, there we go. Tally-ho, well done, cricket. It was a magnificent game of cricket.
Victor Meldrew's come off his long run today, hasn't he? Blimey.
I'm just putting the other side. I'm just putting the other side of it.
Through gritted teeth. Well, anyway, you make valid points.
What I'm saying is this, Yoz. It's great for the game to have. It's great for cricket to have a match like this. But when some decisions are so fundamentally flawed, I think it does sort of undermine it in a way. It hasn't played out. The game hasn't played out to a sort of natural logical conclusion. It's skewed by decisions that were taken in the game that sort of created an unusual match, yes, but created a match that shouldn't have happened like that. Anyway, I'm going to Ashton Gate tonight to watch Bristol City play Manchester City, and what I'm really looking forward to is Manchester City scoring 2 own goals in the last 5 minutes to give Bristol City a 5-4 victory, and then Pep Guardiola coming out afterwards and saying it was great for football. What a fantastic occasion. It was great for football. Yeah, I can imagine that being said.
Dream on. Dream on. Look, it's really rattled your cage, or you've been rattling the cages pretty well today.
Well, you know, Yoz, you know that we've been talking about this throughout the game, and I've been making this point throughout the game, and it's not, and I, you know, it's, I'm not sitting here now and saying these things in hindsight. I said them during the game, and yeah, no one could have predicted the outcome that we had today. Just a remarkable, stunning, wonderful, sort of glorious denouement. But England did not set out to create this amazing finish in this test match.
We're all flawed fundamentally, aren't we?
Well, we are. Of course we are. Of course
so,
we are.
So yeah. Let's just listen to a little clip of both Ben Stokes and Brendan McCullum talking after the match on BT Sport.
I just think that game as a whole, in terms of, you know, what Test cricket's about, was just incredible. You know, the emotions that I'm sure, well, we were obviously going through upstairs, and obviously the Kiwi boys out there as well. I mean, that, just for a Test match, it was just incredible to be involved in. I think everyone's got their money worth who turned up today as well.
So obviously it would have been nice to have won the Test match and then won the series, but, you know, we're right at the start of this this campaign, we said we wanted to try and entertain and to bring fans into the game and to bring real relevance to Test cricket, and I think even on the wrong side of it today, I think we certainly achieved that. So credit to New Zealand, they were epic in their defence of that total, but I thought we certainly played our part, and it was a great game to be a part of. I was actually quite calm. The boys, you know, again, we played so well right throughout the Test match, and we know what we're here for. So whether we win or whether we lose, is, I know we get judged on it, but what we're trying to do is play a style of cricket and to try and entertain people all around the world. And, you know, when it got as tense as what it got, it was kind of left in the hands of the gods a little bit, and it wasn't to be for us. But the guys were really calm, and I think they all enjoyed it, even after we lost. You know, we walk in the dressing room, there's still smiles on their faces, because we've kind of achieved a small part of what it's about, which is to make Test cricket exciting, but still disappointed to lose, obviously.
So both of them basically saying, actually, it was almost part of the master plan. Obviously, they're disappointed to lose, but the underlying driving force is to try and create more interest and entertainment in the Test cricketing format.
And I'm, listen, Yoz, and I'm all for that. I'm not saying don't be entertaining. Please don't. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is just also you need to combine that with cricket smarts as well as cricket entertainment.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lots of other kind of, you know, fascinating little bits to just mull over in that last day's play. I mean, the classic run out of Harry Brook for a start. Of course, he got the wicket of Kane Williamson with that dribbly ball down the leg side. I didn't even know he bowled, frankly. And I don't think he did either, because apparently he bowls off breaks in the nets. But he was rolling those little wrong-footing seamers in the game. A bit like, actually, he reminded me a bit of Chris Harris. And it was funny, because it was quite interesting listening to Michael Atherton talking about Harry Brook on commentary on TalkSport. And, you know, he was saying, oh, you know, if not a bit of a sort of innocuous action and so on. In fact, well, I remember once asking Michael Atherton, who was the bowler he least liked facing out of, you know, Ambrose, Donald, Wacker, Wasim, etc. And he said, Chris Harris of New Zealand, who bowled little dribblies off the wrong foot very slowly at about 64 miles an hour. And that's what Harry Brook was bowling. What a funny event to get Kane Williamson caught down the leg side like that. And then, you know, the kind of mirror image, the final wicket, Jimmy Anderson having smacked Neil Wagner for a hearty four through mid-wicket, then tries to bat properly with two runs wanted and gets a little tickle down the leg side caught behind. Yeah, all those sort of silly imponderables. And then, of course, Brook in the second innings coming out to bat. This was the moment, wasn't it, when Root was sort of well entrenched and England were sort of wobbling a bit, but you thought, here we are, here's Harry Brook, here's Joe Root, they'll see us home. Two balls later, Brook's walking back without facing.
That was an extraordinary moment, that. I mean, shades actually of Edgbaston when Joe Root ran out Alex Lees in that run chase against India. Poor judgment from Root. Dabbed it and ran. I mean, it was a really odd single. But it just shows, doesn't it, that the cricketing gods can give and they can take away. Right. I mean, Harry Brooks actually bowled 1,000 balls in first-class cricket. That was his ninth wicket. But I don't think I'd knowingly seen him bowl. And what an absolute strangle that was. I actually thought New Zealand, their batting, late order batting in their second innings was pretty...
brainless?
Well, that's one word you could use, yeah. I mean, they frittered their wickets. I mean, they were in a position of such strength, weren't they, I think? 250 odd ahead, five wickets left, and suddenly, bang, bang. I mean, the wicket of Williamson was just one of those things that can happen, but, you know, the run out of Bracewell, Southie playing a huge wipe, Blundell playing a huge wipe. England were actually quite fortunate to be chasing 258. As it was, it sort of felt they got out of jail ultimately. I mean, they should have been chasing 300, 350 if New Zealand had just applied a bit more, I know, common sense to the situation. But as you say, we're all flawed, Yoz. We all make mistakes.
Well, I mean, there was some good examples actually in that, as you say, in that last bit of the New Zealand innings. I mean, that dozy cricket from Bracewell, where he easily completed a two, but he didn't run his bat in, and folks receiving the throw from the deep from Stokes kind of almost didn't pretend, but he wasn't that interested. And then suddenly he saw the rather dozy running in the corner of his eye and just grabbed the ball with one hand and whipped the bails off almost by instinct. And it just so happened that at that moment, those of you who haven't seen this, at that moment, although Bracewell was over the line, he was in the air and he hadn't touched the ground with his bat or his feet. So bizarrely, there was sort of like a centimetre between the bottom of his studs and the ground as folks removed the bails and he was run out. And then actually, I thought that there was some good cricket by both Leach and Stokes to get a couple of those late order wickets, especially Southie. So Leach, quite unconventionally, bowling over the wicket into the rough, which he doesn't very often do, but he did it to Southie. But cleverly, Stokes kept himself in sort of reasonable range at mid-on, tempting Southie to go over the top. And of course he did and got a skied catch. And then the same thing happened to Blundell as well, that, you know, he kept the fielders at mid-on in, tempting him to go for the big one over mid-on, and he got out. And that was the end of the innings. So there's some quite good cricket by England there, quite good bowling by Leach, good captaincy by Stokes, good opportunity by Folks that brought that innings to a sudden conclusion.
Yeah. Well, but you've got two pretty experienced cricketers out there in Southie and Blundell. Surely they could see the plan as well. To me, it just seemed like New Zealand just, you know, slowly catching monkey. You just bat and bat and bat and just wear England down. I mean, they were bowling Leach and Brook. They were on their knees in the field, and I think they rather surrendered to, you know, quite an obvious plan. I mean, if you're bowling into the rough with the field up, you pretty much know what the opposition captain's trying to do, don't you? And New Zealand fell into the plan anyway. As it turned out, it worked well for them. One thing we haven't talked about yet, Yoz, is the penultimate ball of the match. We talked about Jimmy Anderson running down the pitch and smacking it for four. And we talked about the final ball. Shades of Sri Lanka at Headingley when Jimmy Anderson was out to the penultimate ball of the match and England nearly batting through that final day. I mean, it's tough, isn't it, as a tail ender. You're getting bombarded by the quick bowler and you're just expected to come out and, you know, stick in or score the winning runs. Not easy. And Anderson just, yeah, glancing it down the leg side. But the penultimate ball was a wide. It just was. It was a wide. I've seen it on the TV. Why wasn't it called as a wide? I mean, New Zealand will say, well, you know, go back to the World Cup final and that, you know, the crossing, and England were given an extra run and that shouldn't have happened. And yes, by the laws of the game, they should. One thing I would say about that is probably one of those things that's quite an obscure law. I don't know, and probably quite hard to judge. Anyway, that was a mistake as well. But this was a much clearer mistake, it seemed to me. I can't understand why the umpires didn't want to make the tough call and give the wide. But, you know.
Rod Tucker, wasn't it, who was the bowler's end there. And then Chris Gaffney, the local umpire, was at square leg. And it was one of those where the height and the width combined made it should have been called a wide. Sometimes a ball of that height would be all right if it was straight, but it was down the leg side. But it wasn't down the leg side far enough to be called a wide on width. But I think it was
on height.
High enough to be called wide on height. Yeah. And was that why Anderson looked so cross when he was out? Because obviously he was out, and that was devastating in itself. But I noticed he gave a bit of verbal to someone soon after he was given out off that last ball. And I wondered if it was just a little jibe at the umpire.
Well, I just don't know. It's something that, well, eventually I sort of have to ask him in a quiet and private moment. He might reveal it. But, yeah, I mean, probably at the time, I don't know. I think you in that situation, you'd want a wide, wouldn't you? Okay, you accept the umpire's decision. It's not been called. You have to get on with it and then face the next ball and then you're out. And it sort of compounds. The disappointment. So that, you know, in any game there are moments. I mean, there was some contention about an Ollie Pope catch as well, wasn't there? Whether he was actually on the cut bit, or his hand was over the cut bit when he took the catch as well. I suppose those are, well, you could, with TV these days, you can actually replay them, can't you? And get a definitive verdict. So perhaps the umpires could have gone back on that as well. So it's the great thing about over 5 days. There are so many talking points, and this game threw up so many talking points, and there was a lot of glorious cricket played. I mean, Joe Root, for example, what a game he had. I mean, how was he not player of the match? I mean, I know he was on the losing side. He made 248 runs for once out. Kane Williamson made 138 runs for twice out, and he was somehow player of the match. It's bizarre. I mean, the point about player of the match is, so the outstanding individual performance, surely. Okay, sometimes, and often, it shapes the win. And you could, well, Williamson's century was important. But actually, you know, Root's innings and Root's efforts in both innings shaped the match enormously as well. And you know, he was the outstanding individual in the game. He also got a wicket as well, didn't he? A vital wicket when England were bowling. Anyway, those are small points. Who really cares about player of the match? Is quite a minor
one
thing.
Player of the match would for me actually would be the groundsman.
Yeah,
because
great surface.
You know, when you want a pitch for 5 days, you want something that helps the faster bowlers initially, something that's good to bat on in the middle, and something that helps the spinners at the end. And actually, that was exactly what it did. It was just good to bowl on really that first couple of days. Although, you know, if you batted well, you got runs. And then it flattened out, and it was pretty hard to get wickets for sort of days 3 and 4. And then finally, on the final day, if they'd had two good spinners bowling, and Michael Brazel was obviously not that good, they would have caused havoc. And it was really turning and bouncing. The bounce was interesting as well. And, I mean, another sort of player of the match would be Neil Wagner, who got absolutely hammered everywhere to all parts for most of this series and came back with this unstinting total dedication to the job in that last kind of hour of play, banging it in short relentlessly and finally getting his reward, taking a couple of good catches as well, difficult catches on the boundary. So there were so many heroes there, really. And I agree with you that Root was masterly. It's a joy watching him bat, isn't it? Because wherever he bats, whatever situation, whatever the pitch is, he finds a way of making runs in a beautifully fluent and almost sort of nonchalant way. And then suddenly, when you think he's just sort of pottering along at his own nice steady pace, he steps out and wallops the off spinner for a big six over long on, and, you know, sweeps him and reverse sweeps him. And he's just fascinating to watch the way he, you know, constructs an innings.
Yeah, wonderful, magnificent game, and good to see him sort of playing in the Joe Root way with a couple of frills thrown in as well. But he's such a good player of spin. I think he's so confident, isn't he, against the spinner that he can take him on. I totally agree about the ground staff coming up with that surface. What a brilliant the pitch for a test match. It kept everyone interested, and that's what you want, isn't it? Full marks. And anyone who had a ticket for the last few days, yeah, they'll never forget it. I mean, actually, Ben Stokes said everyone got their money's worth today, but of course everyone was let in free.
Yeah. Yeah, so, that's a great move. Stokes, his knee will obviously be a subject of great discussion over the next few weeks. It was just interesting actually watching him today batting and obviously in pain. And I can sort of share in that pain a little bit. My left knee is in exactly the same state as his. And I know exactly what he gets at times is what happens is when your knee deteriorates, as his obviously has done, you get lots of little fragments that get stuck under the kneecap. It's actually the cartilage between the kneecap and the joint that gradually sort of fractures and disintegrates. It sounds disgusting, but it's tiny little fragments which can get lodged in the wrong place when you particularly do a particular motion with your knee, and then it really aggravates. It's like a little tiny shard that gets stuck between the joints and just causes you this agonizing pain. And so then if you flex the knee, you can sort of shift that fragment. Obviously, the inflammation is still there, but the actual jarring pain can be shifted by just flexing the knee. And that's why he keeps bending his knee again to try and shift those little fragments and shift them away from the most inflamed area. I don't know what he does ultimately. He's obviously going to have quite a lot of rehab and maybe an operation of some kind. You can flush out those fragments and then you can come back quite quickly, but in his case it may be too late for the flush out. He may need, sometimes you can also get a replacement cartilage, an artificial cartilage put in, which helps the kneecap slide better over the joint when you bend the knee. But the trouble is he puts so much force through that knee joint, especially when he's bowling, that it's difficult to have anything artificial in there. He says that he's going to play the IPL and that actually that won't put that much pressure on his knee. I'm not sure about that because, you know, the IPL's frenetic. You know, you're batting, you're fielding, dashing around the boundary, taking diving catches, dashing between the wickets. He'll probably have to bowl the odd over here and there. I'm not sure he's going to get much rest, but at least he's not out in the field for, you know, hours. It'll only be an hour and a half or something. But I do worry a bit, really.
Yeah, he says, oh, you know, on we go, basically, doesn't he? He tends to shrug it off. I remember when he seemed to twist his knee during the Trent Bridge Test match last year, and he was hobbling as England got over the line against New Zealand. Afterwards, he said, oh, no, it's not a problem at all. He seems to better work through the pain somehow. Although in this Test match, there were times when really you need him to bowl a fit Ben Stokes. You need him to bowl. England was struggling. They were looking for wickets. And he wasn't able to bowl. He bowled a couple of overs and that was it. Just look at Ben Stokes this winter. Since his heroics in the T20 World Cup when he won England two games with the bat, including the final, he's not made a half century in any of the test matches this winter, and he's only taken two wickets. He's sort of talismanic figure for this England side, and sort of goading them, coaxing them, driving them, setting the template for how they want to play. But actually individually he's not had a great time of it, and there were times in this game where England wanted a bit more from him and he wasn't able to give it, especially with the ball in the second innings. And what I thought was interesting as well today was that he did assess the situation, didn't he? When he came in, England were under real pressure, and what he didn't do was go bullet a gate. He actually played normal Test cricket, and he dug in with Root, and it was a partnership that looked as if it was taking England to victory. I mean, they needed 56 to win when Stokes was out, so they got themselves right in the frame of winning. And actually, you texted me at lunchtime and said England are going to win this game, and they needed 90 to win. And you sort of had a sense there, if Root and Stokes stay together, yeah, and probably another 20 runs together, and they would have won the game. That would have, could have, should have. You can always look at those small things, can't you? In matches that have such a tight conclusion. And Neil Wagner, yeah, just bouncing them out. Folks out, Broad out, Root out, Stokes, all to short balls, all managing to coax aggressive shots out of this England team. If you put the highlights together, if you put the highlights together of England's second innings and showed it, just sort of took the tape back and showed it to Test cricketers of 30, 40 years ago, they'd be spluttering on their gin and tonics, wouldn't they, at the way England got out in this second innings. Mind you, probably need to show them some of the aggressive shots in between as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, how many pull batting shots did Ben Folkes play, which he didn't run for as well? I mean, he hit so many shots out to the deep field, protecting Jack Leach from the strike, and therefore not running because it went straight to a deep square leg or a deep mid-wicket fielder. He hit some great shots for nothing. And I thought he played really well, actually. It's so difficult, isn't it, managing a situation like that, managing Jack Leach, who he's actually got an okay defence, but he just can't get a run, can he? He hasn't really got any scoring shots. And you've got to try and move the score forward as well as protecting him. So it was a tricky situation for folks. He did really well. Actually, I'm just looking, funnily enough, at the averages of the batsmen in the team since the McCullum and Stokes era began. And it's makes quite interesting reading that these are the averages of the batsmen in the side since the start of last summer. Ben Duckett, 56. Zach Crawley, 25. Ollie Pope, 38. Joe Root, 62.89. Incredible. Johnny Bairstow, 75.66. Harry Brook, 80.9, which of course would have been even higher but for his first bowler today, or not even facing a ball today. Ben Stokes averaging 36. It's not bad, actually, considering he hasn't really made a massive contribution, you feel. And Ben Folkes, 38. That's good, isn't it? Mm. Good average.
Yeah.
38.9, so nearly 39. So you're not far off 40 for Ben Folkes. He is the genuine article.
Yeah. Yeah, all good numbers there, apart from Zach Crawley, who continues to produce the same sort of figures that he's produced for a large part of his Test match career. And there is Johnny Bairstow waiting in the wings. There are all sorts of ideas about how he comes back into the side. Because you cannot leave out Harry Brook. I mean, Harry Brook came in for Bairstow, but Brook has surely got to play. It's weird, isn't it, with cricket, how the order in which you bat is so important. Opener is a very designated role, number three, number five. But it just would feel weird to have a Test match side where Crawley was in it and Brook wasn't in it now. But I don't know how they sort that out. I mean, I saw Steve James suggesting in the Times that Joe Root opening is an option for England. And yeah, possibly it is. That might be one way to go. But, they're going to get Bairstow in, presumably they're going to have to leave out one of the openers. That's how it looks at the moment. I mean, the thing is, what often happens is someone gets injured, don't they? You arrive at a solution through natural means rather than through brutal means. I don't know what they do. I mean, Johnny Bairstow's got to get fit first, hasn't he?
Well, yeah, but
nasty injury.
I've seen an Instagram clip of him running around a track.
Right, good.
And he looks pretty good, actually. I mean, he's running at a decent pace around a running track and looked, sort of strong. Obviously not quite at full pelt, probably, but I was encouraged by that. He's got a natural running style again, which after an injury like that is not easy to regain. So that's quite a positive sign. And, that's the key, isn't it? Him being able to be mobile, even if there's some niggly issues with the injury, as long as he's mobile and can run freely, then that's a good sign. Now he just needs to get back to playing.
Yeah, well, that is encouraging for him and for England. I mean, it's 6 months since he did the injury. Now the Ashes are not until June, so he's still got quite a long time to get fit, and the timeline you feel works for him. But so what would you do then, Yoz, with the Johnny Bairstow coming back in situation?
Really good question. I mean I'd either have
folks dropping out is another option, isn't it?
I like folks, actually. I've come round to thinking he's a very valuable cricketer, and well, not that I thought he wasn't before, but I think he's really stood up and showed what he's made of. I think it's either Brook or Root to open. Yeah, I guess I wouldn't open with Bairstow. I think it'd be tempting to say, go on, do what you do in one day cricket and go for it. But I just think that's so difficult against the quality of the likes of Cummins and Hazelwood with a new ball in English conditions. I just don't think you can play like that. Jason Roy tried it, didn't he? Alex Hales has tried it as well, opening at the top of the innings in test matches, but they didn't come off. And you need someone with a decent technique. And Duckett will be the one, assuming he continues his run, he'll be the one that probably looks to be a bit more positive. You need someone who's got a bit of technique at the top of the order. And as time has gone on, I've been a big fan of Zach Crawley, but as time has gone on, he just looks so vulnerable to anything pitched up. He doesn't use his height. He doesn't use his big stride at all to get forward and defend his wicket. He just looks a walking wicket, really, a lot of the time, especially against the new ball. Ollie Pope could open. I mean, that would be another one. He's got a good method. You know, he could open. So I think England have got choices. They've got to obviously come up with the answer. I wouldn't open with Bairstow because he's too valuable as the counterpuncher down the order.
And that's the one thing about Joe Root, isn't it? Is Joe Root too valuable at, say, somewhere like four? Yeah. I mean, he was batting at three, wasn't he? And eventually they said, no, go back to four. Because he has opened before. He's opened for England many times. He opened at the start of his career. He's got an Ashes 100 opening. It's great, is it? Trying to fit 11 in and try to get the right balance. And sometimes it's obvious, but not most of the time it's not. It's those selection meetings where you're grappling and trying to solve the problem, really, and come up with something that works. But it doesn't feel as if it's working for Zach Crawley. And you're right, it doesn't feel as if it's necessarily going to work against this Australian attack. It's not just a hunch. Yeah, the numbers and the evidence seem to back it up, really. He's a lovely shot maker. You know, when he's playing those glorious strokes, then you think, this guy's got to play. I mean, I remember the Australians being utterly beguiled by him when he made that 70-odd, wherever it was, in Sydney. You know, their last, a Pom who's prepared to stand up and take us on. But amidst the glorious shot-making, there's so much vulnerability that he's just struggling to stay in. So anyway, that's something that they're going to have to work out later in the year. You know, form will come into it, I suppose, as well. Conditions, you know, what sort of summer we have and who's fit for Australia, what sort of bowling attack they're going to put out on the field. Anyway, it's been a glorious 5 days. Glorious 5 days in Wellington. Anyone who was there, you know, will never forget it. Anyone who played in it will never forget it. But England should have won this test match by 200 runs.
Amazing, really. 370-odd overs, and it's all come down to one ball and one run separating the two teams. So the barest of margins absolutely was the right phrase. Nothing, of course, stops in the English cricket world, because England now play a one-day international series starting tomorrow in Bangladesh. And Jos Buttler's already been talking about this is the start of England's proper campaign towards the World Cup in October this year, that of course they are the holders of. So nothing stops in the cricket world.
And Australia and India, Jos.
And I was going to say, actually, Australia, India, they're resuming as well after the first two tests, 2-0 to India so far. No Cummins or Warner in that Australia side. They'll be up against it for sure. That match is in indoor now, which doesn't stage too many test matches. So lots for us to talk about later in the week. Just sit back and enjoy, if you did watch that last bit of that game, just sit back and enjoy the fact that Test cricket is probably the ultimate form of sport.
Podcast Network. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.